Okay, well, tonight I consider this more of a primer message, I think, in the entire Prophecy Wednesday nights. I think I've only had one other message. It was a kind of a two-parter. My goal was not to do any of those, but it is what it is. During the first half of what's referred to as the biblically prophesied event known as the tribulation period, which Daniel talked about, which Jesus talked about, which Paul talked about, which the Apostle John talked about, there will be a great amount of people to be forcefully conversion, to worship the image of a mighty world ruler. And this unusual idol, this very unique image, will be constructed and will be established in the sanctuary of a future temple, the third temple, on the Temple Mount in Israel today. Some of the verses will back this up. Will be Daniel 9:27. And he will make a firm covenant with the many for 1 week. But in the middle of the week, the 1 week is a prophetic 7 years. But in the middle of the week, he will put a stop to sacrifice and grain offering. And on the wing of the abominations will come one who makes desolate, even until a complete destruction. One that is decreed is poured out on the one who makes desolate. Daniel 11:31-35. Forces from him will arise, desecrate the sanctuary fortress, and do away with the regular sacrifice, and they will set up the abomination of desolation. By smooth words he will turn to godlessness those who act wickedly toward the covenant, but the people who know their God will display strength, and they will take action. Those who have insight among people will give understanding to the many, yet they will fall by sword and by flame, by captivity and plunder for many days. Now when they fall, they will be granted a little help, and many will join with them in hypocrisy. Some of those who have insight will fall in order to refine, purge, and make them pure until the end time, because it is still to come at the appointed time. Jesus talks about this in the book of Matthew, the Olivet Discourse. He actually points back. It's a callback to the Daniel prophecy that we just read. Jesus said, "Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of through Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place," let the reader understand where the holy place is, third temple, "when those who are in Judah will flee to the mountains," as Judea, "must flee to the mountains. Whoever is on the housetop must not go down to get the things out that are in his house. Whoever is in the field must not turn back to get his cloak. But woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing babies in those days. But pray that your flight will not be in the winter or on a Sabbath. For then there will be a great tribulation, such as has not occurred since the beginning of the world until now, nor ever will." The Apostle Paul talks this up, this very same event that Daniel talked about, that Jesus talked about. The Apostle Paul deals with it in 2 Thessalonians. "Now we request you, brethren, with regard to the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and our gathering together to Him, that you not be quickly shaken from your composure or to be disturbed either by a spirit or disturbed by a message or a letter as if it from us, to the effect that the day of the Lord has come. Let no one in any way deceive you, for it will not come unless the apostasy comes first." And there's two movements here that the Apostle Paul is talking about. Before what Daniel talked about, before what Jesus talked about, Paul's saying these are the two antecedents. These are the things, these are the prerequisites. These are the events that must take place. Number one, the great apostasy, and the man of lawlessness is revealed, the son of destruction, who opposes and exalts himself above every so-called god or every object of worship, so that he takes his seat in the same place Daniel talked about, in the same place Jesus talked about, in the holy temple of God, displaying himself as being God. This image or this lifelike engraving will look like a person, will look like a man. He will have lifelike features. And there will be a time when this image will be required to be worshipped by everyone as though it were God. Daniel referred to this detestable image and this event as an event called the abomination of desolation. Can you all say abomination of desolation? It's really bad, but it's a cool sounding group of words. Abomination of desolation. Jesus quoted Daniel's term and said that this event will inaugurate the great tribulation. Such has not happened since the beginning of the world until now, nor will ever be again. Paul taught the Gentile converts in Thessalonica about this same event, saying that when this event occurs, it will be the beginning of the days of the Lord. The day of the Lord is a long prophesied about event. It is a long prophesied event that talks about God's judgment upon people. God's judgment and wrath, not just on people generic, but specifically on non-believers. Specifically for lost people. But that day will not start until two key events take place. And I made it a point to point it out to you in the Thessalonican passage. But that day will not start until two key events happen. First, some professed believers will rebel against God, and they will bring about what's called the great apostasy from the faith. The second event will be that the son of destruction, or the man of sin, the lawless one, will be revealed. That word revealed almost talks about something that has been hidden until the right time, to be revealed at the right moment, at the appointed time. So there will be an apostasy that goes on among the church, believers, Christians, and then the son of destruction will come about at a certain point. At that point, then we can look at those passages in Daniel and Matthew and 2 Thessalonians. Now they can happen. John, the writer of Revelation, he had a lot of prophetic vision, and those visions were interpreted to him, for him, by angels. And he recounted what he saw, and we can learn by what he wrote down for our own good and our own blessing. Revelation 1:3. Blessed is he who reads and those who hear the words of the prophecy and heed the things which are written in it, for the time is near. I don't have any regret whatsoever about spending an entire year in prophecy, because I think that there is a wealth to be learned from it. I think that there is a blessing that comes from it. It's time for every pastor, I think, of every evangelical, Bible-believing church to look at the Scripture, because it is edifying for the body. It equips us. Brother Chris said last week, we ought to put some of these messages in a glass case so when the rapture happens, somebody can come into the church and see what happened, to know what has occurred. The Apostle John gives us a vision in Revelation 13. He says this: And the dragon stood on the sand of the shore. Then I saw a beast coming out of the sea, having 10 horns and 7 heads, and on his heads were 7 diadems. And on his head, or literally coming out of his head, which I'm assuming, which means coming out of his mouth, were blasphemous names. And 5 verses later in verse 6, John writes, And he opened his mouth in blasphemies against God, to blaspheme God's holy name, and to blaspheme God's holy tabernacle, that is, those who dwell in heaven. In verse 4, this blasphemous beast was also given an ability to do something. Revelation 13:7 says, It was also given to him to make war with a very specific group. Who was the specific group? The saints would be believers, and to overcome them, and authority over every tribe and every people and every tongue and every nation was given to him. In verse 13:7, to me means this: after the rapture has occurred, the church has been evacuated from the earth. I believe that people can get saved in the tribulation. I believe that people still can be brought to Christ. However, I think it will be difficult for them. I think it will be arduous for them. It'll be hard to eat. It'll be hard to make money. It'll be hard to sell anything. It will be hard to buy things. I think it'll be a chore to get water for those who come to Christ during the tribulation. But if this image has been given the authority to wage war against the saints, and if the rapture has already occurred, then it's talking about the saints who are still here after the rapture, who become Christians post-rapture. This will be the saints who come to Christ after the rapture, who live during the reign of the Antichrist. Many will be martyred in this season. Many will lose their head because they don't take the mark of the beast. Many will find themselves starving to death, their children starving to death, because they got saved after the rapture. Many will be martyred in this season as the beast or the Antichrist overcomes the saints. But those who deny the Lord and those who deny that they ever knew Him, those who bow before the beast, those who receive a mark, which we'll talk about in a moment, and we're just going to get our toes to the edge of the mark tonight, and then I'm going to finish this message in 2 weeks when we talk about, take a very hard look and see what the mark may very well mean. Revelation 13:8. All who dwell on the earth will worship Him. Everyone whose name has not been written from the foundation of the world in the book of life of the Lamb who has been slain. That means this: if their name is not in the book, they will bow and worship. Now, there's the book of life in the Bible, and there's the Lamb's book of life in the Bible. Everyone who's ever been born, their name is in the book of life. Everyone who has been born again is in the Lamb's book of life. When you understand that and you see that verse through that context, everyone whose name is not in the Lord's book, the Lamb's book, they are the ones who will be doing the bowing. They're the ones who will receive the mark. Verse 11 relates to another beast rising out of the earth. Later, this beast is called the false prophet. He will be a miracle worker. He will be an aid to the first beast, to the first awe-inspiring beast. He will almost be like, if you can in your mind, imagine Elisha to Elijah. But not so. This is the evil version of this. This is the satanic version of this. And by the way, the devil will always try to imitate what God does. True. He will always try to counterfeit what God does. And so maybe a better example would be this is maybe a John the Baptist compared to a helper mate to Jesus. I don't know. I'm speaking off the cuff and probably shouldn't do that. Revelation 13:14-15. And he deceived those who dwell on the earth because of the signs which it was given to him to perform in the presence of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast, who had the wound of the sword and has come to life, and it was given to him to give breath to the image of the beast, so that the image of the beast would even speak, and cause as many as do not worship the image of the beast to be killed. He will cause those who yet live on the earth to make an image of the beast. That's the thing. The location is at the Temple Mount in the temple, which is allowed to come alive, according to verse 14. And this is by demonic deception. This is through demonic means, whether it's sorcery, whether it's witchcraft, whether it's the occult. But he gives breath to the image of the beast so it could speak, so people would have something to worship. Or in verse 15, it says the option is this: if you don't worship this beast, you will be you'll be killed. You'll die. So those who worshiped and lived were required to receive a sign or required to receive a mark on their right hand or their forehead, in verse 16 and 17, so that no one may buy or sell except he who has the mark. Now, this is explained as the mark of the beast, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. Revelation 13:16-13. And he causes all the small and the great, and the rich and the poor, and the free man and the slave to be given a mark on their right hand and their forehead. And he provides that no one will be able to buy or sell or trade except the one who has a mark, either the name of the beast or the number of the name. Now, we're not told what the name of the beast is. I wish we did. I wish we were given a title. I wish we were given something much plainer than what we have. But what we have is what we have. Revelation 13:18. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast. For the number is that of a man, and his number is 666. There it is. There it is. The infamous number. 666. Perhaps no other series of numbers has caused so much speculation. Perhaps no other series of numbers has caused so much suspicion for thousands of years among eschatological students or Bible scholars, end of the world conspiracy enthusiasts. No one knows what the mysterious 666 is, nor does anyone know the name of the actual Antichrist. Back when Obama was president, they said 666 was his name. But I also remember growing up in the 80s, people said Ronald Reagan. was 666 as well. I don't know how they got that, but that's, I'm just saying, people have been guessing that for years. However, according to verse 18, those numbers at some time in the future will help us identify who this person is. The wise person will be able to discern the reading of Revelation to identify this man. And by the way, I think it will be a man. It won't be a woman. It will be a man. Whether that's even possible at this point in time, or if we have to wait for the great tribulation to begin, or maybe we'll know this at the end of the great seal judgments in Revelation 6, or maybe when the Antichrist is revealed, I think then we'll know. But I think until this time, I think until the time we know, I think God has got a supernatural restrainer on this. I think that there are some mysteries that will remain mysteries until God reveals them. Where do I get that from? Let me read this passage to you. The Bible says in 2 Thessalonians, "Let no one in any way deceive you, for it will not come unless the apostasy comes first, and the man of lawlessness is revealed, the son of destruction, who opposes and exalts himself above every so-called God or object of God, so that he takes his seat in the temple of God, displaying himself as being God." We've read this so far. "Do you not remember that while I was still with you, I was telling you these things, and you know what restrains him now?" Him talking about the son of destruction. He's talking, saying, you know what restrains him. "So that in his time he will be revealed. For the mystery of lawlessness is already at work. Only he who now restrains," church say restrains, "restrain, will do so until he is taken out of the way." Something is restraining the full revelation. Something is restraining the identification of this person. The truth is, we don't know. The truth is, Ron Phillips doesn't know. The truth is, Perry Stone doesn't know. The truth is, no one knows. Believe it or not, and you can check me on this, do you realize that the word Antichrist is not mentioned one time in the book of Revelation? It's only mentioned four times in the entire New Testament. John wrote those, and he mentioned Antichrist two times in two of the three small epistles known for his name, 1 John, 2 John, 3 John. Antichrist is only mentioned four times by John, not in Revelation, but in the other epistles. This message tonight is the primer to get us to look what the true mark of the beast really means. What 666 really stands for. I would preach this second part to you next Wednesday night, but we're going to be in revival, so I'm going to have to fast forward, put it on pause, and then we'll pick up the play again on, I think it's September 5th. First Wednesday in September, all right? What I would like for you...